So, folks, the breaking news is that the Senate passes the big, beautiful bill. The last vote was what this bill would be called, and the Democrats wanted to make sure that it was amended so that it would not read as the big, beautiful bill. They were successful in doing so, so it will not be called the big, beautiful bill officially. It heads back to the House, and there'll be a vote on a rule to proceed. And that's basically language to indicate whether or not they're going to take a vote on the Senate bill as it, in the structure and in the way that it's composed as it comes back to the House. There are those in the Freedom Caucus that are saying now that they don't believe that the votes are going to be there on the rule to proceed to take that vote on Wednesday, that there's going to be an attempt to compromise on a number of these bills because it increases the deficit by a little bit over $3 trillion over the next 10 years because of some of the provisions that were placed into the bill on the Senate side that a number of House members don't necessarily agree with. And there were some of the tax credits, the green tax credits that were placed back into the bill and some other provisions that were placed back into the bill in order to get the votes in order to pass this. And it passed by a tie break vote by J.D. Vance, the vice president, as the president of the Senate. So that's where we are. And it'll be interesting to see where this goes from here. Obviously, there's going to have to be some compromise because there was a lot of compromise to get that out of the House, which is only on a 3-vote margin. So that's the latest that we have there on the big, beautiful bill. Liz Murrell, the Louisiana Attorney General, joins us. Liz, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's good to be with you, Newell, always.
Thank you. I tried to lay out some of the provisions of what's going on between the state of Louisiana and CVS. It's a very complex issue. But from what I understand, there are 3 lawsuits that have been filed by your office. If you could kind of lay this out for our listening audience.
Yeah, that's right. So one of the lawsuits relates to the text messaging campaign that was initiated in the last 2 days of session. And that, you know, didn't just involve drawing attention to legislation, which, you know, was still concerning because it looked like they were using customer information to lobby people, to go lobby for them. But it got, you know, exponentially worse when I received text messages from them, because I'm a customer there, that basically said, you know, seniors, veterans, and people with serious health conditions, you might have to pay more for your medication. You might not be able to get it. I mean, it was absolutely intended to scare people and drive them to go fight this legislation on CVS's behalf. And I think that was improper. I think it was deceptive. It certainly was misleading. And, you know, if not outright untruthful. And that's what one of the lawsuits is about. So the second one we filed relates to
actually, let me interrupt you. I got one of those text messages, and I'm going to read it just so everybody knows exactly what it says. It says, CVS Pharmacy, last-minute legislation in Louisiana threatens to close your CVS pharmacy. Your medication costs may go up, and your pharmacist may lose their job. Contact your elected officials to protect your access. Send a message at cvs.co/LA. Pretty damning.
So I got, and I got one that, so I got that one. And then I got another one that basically specifically targets seniors, veterans, and people with serious health conditions. And so they went from the one that you got, you know, perhaps they didn't get enough fear and loathing built into, you know, that first one, that they had to go back in and target vulnerable, you know, healthcare populations to try and scare them into reaching out and pressuring the legislature not to do it. And, you know, quite frankly, the only reason CBS would close is because it voluntarily did not like this legislation. That's an entirely voluntary act. So the legislation didn't close CBS pharmacies. It did address this vertical integration structure that they have with their pharmacy benefits managers. And that is that's the subject of one of the lawsuits. That's really the biggest one of all because it deals with the antitrust problems that go along with this kind of vertical integration structure. It drives all our costs up. It drives up the cost of the drug, which then drives up costs throughout the entire system. And the only people that profit from it are those that closed, vertically integrated corporation that is just trying to make more and more and more money off the rest of us.
And that's why, just to put it in layman's terms, the formulary, the approved drugs that a lot of these insurance companies approve for their insured, goes right back to the PBM, the negotiations that they have with the manufacturing companies, and that's why it's changing all the time. Interestingly, there's a number of states that don't allow a formulary to change more than once in a set period of time. In some states, I think it's 18 months or 24 months. I don't know how that has worked out in those particular states as it relates to pricing or otherwise, but obviously it was a problem where your medicine's constantly getting changed because of these agreements that they enter into. And I'm not so sure who the ultimate beneficiary of it is. They say it's us, but I'm very skeptical of that.
Well, when I've had that experience too. When my kids were younger, especially it was like ADHD medicine. That was one in particular where I remember going to the pharmacy and the generic was like $1.50 or something like that. And they specifically told me that I was not approved for the generic. I had to buy Concerta, the name brand, and the name brand costs more money. Now, somewhere in the system, it costs more money to get the name brand than it does to get the generic. And so, we've long been filing lawsuits over the manipulation of drug pricing on name brand drugs as it relates to keeping generics out of the market. And, this kind of plays into that system too. But PBMs have their own kind of particularly pernicious role in driving drug costs up. And this is the third lawsuit that I have filed against PBMs. I already have existing ones against OptumRx and Express Scripts.
Where do we stand with this? I mean, are they going to be brought together in this lawsuit? The practices are relatively the mirror image of one another, right?
Well, I mean, they may be structured a little bit differently. I mean, Express Scripts, I'm not sure, is vertically integrated. Optum, I think, is they may have some corporate separation, but I think they're owned by United Healthcare. Mm-hmm. Right now there are three separate lawsuits. They're in state court. We just don't have the same kind of system that the federal courts do where you could consolidate cases that have these kind of similar type issues and manage them together for purposes of discovery and other kind of practice before trial. I would like to see that happen in Louisiana. It would certainly be beneficial, I think, to the whole state, because this certainly is something where the activity affects everybody in the state, not just one parish.
Now, you also have a third lawsuit about the harm to independent pharmacies. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, so, it was interesting that CVS was coming out with this narrative that this would close down 100 CVS pharmacies. And my response to that was that CVS has already closed over 100 pharmacies. I'm told it's about 160 in the last few years, and they're independent pharmacists because they're driving them out of business. Those pharmacists provide an important contribution in our rural communities. If you ever look at a map and what it looks like without them, and it already these small independent businesses are going out of business because their pricing keeps getting undercut by a variety of different methods that these big purchasing organizations like CVS and their PBMs use to undercut the recovery of the actual price of the drug that the pharmacist has to pay to keep it in his inventory. So they have all kinds of clawbacks and other types of ways that they try and pull money back. And we have a statute that prohibits that. So not only have I alleged that it's an unfair and deceptive trade practice, but it is expressly contrary to a statute under Title 22 in the insurance code. And they're just doing it anyway, and they've been getting away with it for a couple of years, and we finally said we've had enough.
You know, it's interesting, the medicines that my insurance company doesn't approve, I get those at an independent pharmacy. Because the folks that work at CVS, those are good folks, but they have all kinds of company rules that come down. For instance, the other day I get a call from CVS, and they ask me, why are we getting a prescription for you from a Baton Rouge doctor? I said, well, what difference does it make to you? And they said, well, you know, we have this company policy. I said, well, is he not licensed to be a doctor, a physician in the state of Louisiana? And no, well, he is. I said, so how far from New Orleans does it violate your company policy and set off a red flag? I said, this is not a controlled dangerous substance, that I'm receiving. So why is there a red flag now in your system? I said, so where does it end? I mean, so if a doctor from St. Tammany calls in for a Metairie resident, that would red flag in your system? Yes. Slidell? I mean, Slidell from New Orleans is literally almost a baseball throw. That would red flag in your system? Yes.
I said, and if it's for antibiotics, like, who cares? I mean, if it's for substances, then we do want they've had faced exposure in the opioids litigation.
And that's exactly what they told me.
Right.
They said that's what's stimulating this. I said, well, this isn't opioids. I said, I'm going to an endocrinologist because there's so few here and I can't get in to see one here. I said, it's not like I'm real excited about having to drive to Baton Rouge, but it's the only option I have.
I just don't
understand how y'all don't look at the market and understand, you know, the healthcare delivery here. And you're calling and asking me, you know, these personal questions about why I'm going to a doctor in Baton Rouge. Well, in my view, it's none of your damn business. I'll go where the hell I want to go. You know, and again, it's like I'm not being empowered at all by being able to make the best medical decisions for me. Now, they ultimately cleared it. They've been filling my scripts there for 8 years from this doctor. And it's like, wouldn't that count for something? I mean, but it's an example of how there's corporate policies that don't really align with the everyday practices of healthcare delivery today are problematic for the consumers. I mean, we're always the ones that are taking it in the shorts. I mean, we just always. It doesn't make any sense.
That's exactly right. I mean, and we're the ones that are sort of just driving up to pick up your prescription, and then you're baffled by all this red tape, and it doesn't, you know, make any sense. Then when you start unraveling what the real reasons are, they're not good reasons. And I'll tell you, these are hard cases to litigate. They are the most obstructive, people to litigate against. They have endless amounts of money. And they will just, you know, block you at every step of the way to avoid creating any transparency on how their pricing works.
Have there been any states that have been successful? I mean, we're not the first, right, to bring these types of lawsuits against these companies.
No, there are other states that are suing the PBMs. And the Federal Trade Commission issued a report last year that excoriated them. I mean, it just took them to the woodhouse. But I think that that there is certainly a much more quickly growing focus on the PBMs and their role in our healthcare system. Whereas, like 5 years ago, probably nobody ever heard the word PBM. They just didn't know what they were and they didn't know what they did. But they have made themselves conspicuous in this system because of how much money they make, and so it is drawing a lot of attention, even at the Federal Trade Commission. And I believe that we are going to end up seeing some reform And I think it will be driven a lot by states suing them.
You know, what's interesting is I hear all these anecdotal stories about people getting their medicines outside of the insurance because whatever issues that they're having with pharmacies and otherwise from Canada. And they're paying 25% of what they would pay here in the United States. How do they square that up?
Well, I think that's true in a lot of places. They just pay a lot more money. And again, I mean, that's part of what we're trying to get into with discovery in these cases, is to be able to illustrate more clearly to the public exactly how this is driving our costs up. But at the end of the day, they've exploited loopholes in our system and been able to come in and kind of drive the prices up allegedly through these negotiations. I think the manufacturers benefit from it as well, but the PBMs are really driving the price up and then getting a percentage of that increase. You know, they'll work out some kind of rebate somewhere. Somebody's getting money back. I mean, the PBMs get a piece of it. The pharmaceutical manufacturer gets a piece of it, I think, especially when they drive up the price of the drug itself. The only people who really don't get a piece of it are us.
Us, and you know, I made the observation the other day, the people at work at CVS, they're good people. They're trying to do the right thing. I got a text here from someone that says, Newell, I'm a former pharmacist at CVS. Thanks for addressing the staffing issues at the pharmacies and the stores. We worked our butts off to do the best job we could for our patients, but the company made it impossible and didn't seem to care at all while pretending to have patients as their top priority. I could no longer continue working in that environment after spending years educating myself. You know, you've got all of these folks driving, all these insurance companies driving you to these national chains, and you get there and there's one pharmacist.
Right. I mean, you know,
if I go to my local pharmacy 3 blocks from my house, on average, they have 3 pharmacists there on any given day.
Yeah.
You know, it's like something's not right here. Something is just not working. I don't understand. And I don't hold that against the folks at work there. It's not them. It's their corporate policies.
I mean, it's not them. It's just, you know, I think they've restricted hours in some of these places. And they've, you know, those folks, as I see it, every time I walk in there, are extremely overworked.
Try this on for size.
If you go to an independent pharmacy, go ahead.
My CVS is closed for lunch. The pharmacy's closed for lunch because there's only one pharmacist. Yeah. So they close an hour for lunch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like my independent, they're not closed for lunch.
I mean, you know, somebody said, you know, well, they're open 24 hours. I'm like, well, the pharmacy's not.
Yeah.
You can buy cereal and wine and beer, but you can't get your prescription filled after a certain time. I mean, it's, you know, so they are not the great customer service representatives that they think they are. When the news over here, local news, went out and asked people in CVS's, like, how do you feel? Are you worried if your CVS closes? They're like, no. You know, I mean, I'm not sure they have a whole lot of sympathy from anybody.
Yeah. No, I think this is long overdue, separate and apart from CVS, the whole issue with PBMs is a mystery. It doesn't seem like anybody's ever been able to pull back the layers of the onion. I mean, you know, from national media outlets that have done stories on it and everything else, investigative journalists looking at it. There always seems to be a major part of the story that's missing.
Yep, that is true.
So next step for you guys, obviously the lawsuit's filed. This will be in the district court in Baton Rouge, I would assume.
I think we filed them in St. Landry Parish, which is kind of central, you know, Louisiana. I can file these lawsuits everywhere because we're everywhere. And I think, you know, sometimes we just like to spread out a little bit and get outside of East Baton Rouge Parish.
Yeah. So if you would be willing to come back on the show as this thing progresses, because I'm very interested in the outcome of this. And I think our listening audience is very interested in it as well. And I think people thank you for going to the forefront on this issue.
Well, it is always, I think, rewarding to be able to kind of get these companies back in line. There's just so much opportunity in the area of drug pricing. There's so much money to be made in that area nationally. And, you know, we saw during COVID the government just throwing money basically out the window at the federal level, and all kinds of fraud and abuse occurs during that when there's that much money that's out there for grabbing. So I'm happy to talk about it anytime.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Have a great 4th of July weekend. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that's Liz Muir, Louisiana's Attorney General. We'd love to hear from you what your thoughts are. 504-260-1870. We've set aside a little time to go to the talk lines when we come back from the break, so stay with us. Give us a shout. Welcome back, folks, on the text line. It's hard to talk to a CVS pharmacist on the phone. I didn't vote for Liz Muir, but will the next time. Another texter says, how do you get your meds from a small independent pharmacy during a hurricane evacuation? CVS and Walgreens are national. Others aren't. Well, I can tell you how we got them, because we deal with Majoria Drugs, and they made arrangements with other pharmacies in Florida, actually, where my family evacuated to. I was still here in Katrina. But they coordinated with that actually a multitude of times during hurricanes and were able to do so. And it's a service that they've provided, and I'm thankful that they did. And, in fact, in advance of the storm, they would always send out notices as to how to make these accommodations and also what they were able to do in advance of the storm and maybe filling your script early. Depending on the type of medicine that you had. That's the kind of service that I was talking about, you know, that was available there. And I appreciated the effort. You know, I can tell you from personal experience, both Majoria and Patio Drugs has done that for my family. And I know that they've done it for a lot of other families as well. It didn't seem to be a problem. If there's a will, there's a way. Look, again, I'm not being critical of the folks at CVS. They've been great to me. You know, I don't have a beef with any of them. This is outside of their realm. They've been, for the most part, very accommodating. They're working their tails off, that I can tell you. They have a real skeleton crew. I don't know how they keep up, I'm telling you. They do a great job. And I can tell you that CVS is getting their money's worth out of the crew that I have been exposed to over there. And it's not an easy thing because you're quarterbacking and coordinating, you know, multitudes of calls and this and that and medications and when you can fill a script, when you can't, having to order some of these scripts that they don't keep in inventory because of the cost and this and that and a whole host of different things. It requires a whole backroom operation many times. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen the frustration, you know, while waiting in line, quite frankly. And, you know, and I've seen it at the other places, too. They seem to work it out. They seem to have a different type of relationship with the folks that are there. And I think a lot of folks, you know, appreciate what the independence has done. I certainly hope the independents don't go away. I mean, I think, unfortunately, that may be the path that a lot of this is on. But I certainly hope not. You know, my father was a pharmaceutical salesman most of my adult life. So I know a little bit about pharmacies, how they work, you know, how the supply chain works. That's what he did. He excelled at that. And, you know, he was kind of like salesman of the year for a long, long time. He He sold urologicals and prenatal vitamins for women, and you know, worked for a company out of San Antonio, Texas, and loved that job. Loved the people that were the manufacturers of these drugs, and they loved him. And you know, so there was a lot of fond memories of how it used to be, right? And how things used to be handled. So it's going to be interesting to see. It's another text came in, says, Newell, this bill didn't affect Walgreens or Walmart. Well, no, there are other lawsuits that Liz Murrell has against some of the other PBMs and providers. So that's not true. There are others that are affected and impacted by lawsuits that have been brought forward by the Attorney General Liz Murrell's office. Do we still have JP on the line? Let's go to JP on line one. JP, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Sheriff, how are you doing?
Doing well.
I've been meaning to call you, so I'm curious to know your thoughts. I voted for you numerous times in Jefferson Parish. I have a lot of respect for you. And, you know, with immigration, I have to ask you, if you were going to add a room onto your house, would you have a plan?
Yes.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, my problem with this administration is they don't seem to have a plan. It's not that they're Republican. It's just that they don't have a plan. Like, we have to look at one thing, like immigration, and I'm really curious to see your thoughts on it because you were a police officer for many years. So, to me, the smart thing would have been to do was to come in with a plan as opposed to kicking everybody out. Given those people that actually work here and that we need as laborers, an opportunity to go in to offices around the country, sign in, to be a part of the system, to suck in taxes, to get their fingerprints taken, to get their irises scanned, so they could start being tracked. And over a certain period of time, the smart thing would have been to do was to have come out and said, look, here's your track to become an American citizen. You can start paying taxes in a couple of weeks. Go into these satellite offices around the country and go sign up. Everyone else, let's say those
so
who
JP,
were
let
here,
me let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, but what do you say to the folks that have been sitting outside this country for 4, 5, 8, 10 years waiting to get in? And haven't been able to get in for a whole host of reasons, and you develop an accommodation for those that came here illegally, and you actually put them at the front of the line. How do you square that up for those others?
Well, if you'll let me explain. Well, see, there's a reality of it. You know, the reality of it is after Hurricane Katrina, had it not been for the Hispanic population, I worked in the construction industry at that time. Had it not been for the Hispanic population, New Orleans does not get built back as quickly. We had citizens sitting on their butts in the city, not doing anything, and these people were working 15 hours a day. Now, what I'm saying is, the reality of it is, these people are here now, and they're sending their money back to Honduras, Guatemala, Central America, to support their families. Like, if we
but that doesn't do anything for our economy.
Yes, it does.
I mean, it doesn't. Actually, it's a draw. It's a withdrawal from our economy. Those are called remittances. For example, in 2022, Mexico had about $52 billion in remittances sent from people here to there. So that's a withdrawal from our economy. The U.S. dollar, if I pay somebody in a micro economy, that dollar turns over about 7 times typically, somewhere between 7 and 9 times in that micro economy. With a remittance, it's a disruption. It takes the dollar out of the economy. It doesn't help the U.S. economy.
Can I finish?
Yes, go ahead.
So what I'm saying is, had these people go, had a plan been formed, and these people go in and they start paying taxes to the United States, they're paying taxes into the system while they're waiting to become citizens. So that's bringing what that's revenue coming into the country. And then also, there's a revenue of all the attorneys that would have been hired. For you to submit the application, you have to put up $500, whatever it is. There's a fee.
But you come, you come down to the base question, do you want to reward people that come here illegally, improperly? They didn't follow the rules. And how do you treat the people that have been waiting for years and years? I had a person from Turkey on this show, has been sitting outside of the United States, who has family here, who's been waiting to come to this country for 16 years and has not been able to do so. What do you tell these people? That same person would have been gainfully employed. That same person, by following our rules, would have done everything, would have started paying taxes, had a sponsor, had a place to live, had all of these things been there, but has not been able to get to come in. Because one of the things that is impacted, JP, by all of this is that the federal government figures out how many people have come here illegally, and they modify the illegal migration as a result of those numbers. So it impacts all of these other people.
Sheriff, you know what I would tell them? The same thing that Cassidy, Johnson, Scalise told the majority of Louisianans today that are on Medicaid. You don't matter. Get over it. That's exactly what I would tell them. Because the reality of the situation is...
Wait. What did they tell them today about Medicaid?
Okay, so Johnson's Speaker of the House, his district is 40% of them on Medicaid. Yeah, more people on Medicaid than Louisiana.
But wait a second. Yeah, I don't think you really know what you're talking about, because Medicaid has grown by 50% in the last 5 years. And what the federal government did, which they should have done during COVID, was that they increased payments to help people during COVID. No one ever expected or anticipated, at least I didn't, or anticipated that the federal government was going to continue that level of funding when the crisis was over. Now, what has happened is healthcare providers in this country took advantage of that. They've developed big corporate healthcare delivery systems with those additional dollars, all knowing that there was going to be a day of reckoning. That there was no way that the federal government was going to be able to continue to finance this in perpetuity. Now they're all crying. Now they're all crying uncle, because now they cannot support and they cannot keep what they have developed during COVID up and running. And now they're being removed from the proverbial tit, and they don't want to leave the tit. And
they all knew that
this was going to happen. It's disingenuous for anybody to say we want to continue to take advantage of the funding that was provided to help us make it through COVID, and this funding is going to be out there in perpetuity.
I totally agree with you on that, but you know most of the fraud is coming from the hospitals and the doctors. That's been proven.
It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is we can't continue. We cannot continue this. It cannot continue. Look, you're talking to one of the few Republicans that supported Medicaid expansion, because I knew how important it was during the time of COVID that we were going to need that help and that we were probably going to lose rural hospitals if we didn't get those expansion dollars during that period of time. But I never for a moment thought that this was going to go in perpetuity. It couldn't. The state of Louisiana, like other states, and the federal government have got to face the realities that we can't continue the level of funding that's out there. It's politically unpopular. I get it. People on the tit. They don't want to get off the tit. I get it. I understand it. It's real comfortable being there. But that's not the reality. They know what the reality is. We have created these exotic financing schemes, and we really believe that this thing is going to go on in perpetuity. It can't. There's not enough money to continue this. That's why we find ourselves with a $36 trillion debt and one of the largest expenditure sets that we have in this country today is Medicaid, Medicare. And we can't continue to fund it at the levels that we've been funding it at all. I mean, that's the reality. We don't like it. Again, this is the friction between an unpleasant truth and a comforting lie that I talk about all the time. And what we have been told are comforting lies. This can't continue. You know it, I know it, and everyone knows it. We'll be right back. On the text line, it says, you are ignoring the reality where it's going to affect poor and lower middle class people who rely on this. Nobody gives a it about the big hospitals. Well, you better, because that's where they deliver the care. I mean, this is a balance of interest in this system. Plain and simple. And I've seen it from the hospital side. I've seen it from the insurance side, helping set up the self-insured programs at the sheriff's office. We used to manage claims ourselves for a number of years. I know a little bit about it. And I've seen it from the hospital side, having been a hospital board member for over 20 years. It's a balance of interest. And the whole financing scheme of health care in this state and in most other states is bastardized at best. And it may be that we have too many hospitals. We don't know. We used to be a certificate of need state. You used to have to prove that the market was there to be able to support these hospitals. Because one thing about that asset, it is one that will consume everything. It is the hungriest thing that you've ever seen, and having to feed it is very, very difficult. We got some unpleasant truths about healthcare delivery in this country that we're going to have to come to grips with. There is no doubt about that. We'll be right back. And you won't be walking by yourself because Scoot's headed your way.
No, it's just gonna feel like it. It's gonna feel like you're by yourself. I'll be here, but you're gonna feel alone. Trust me. All right. So, is it a good idea to sleep with your pets? Oh, wait, maybe I should rephrase that. Should you let your pet sleep with you? Because you know some people do that. You know that.
Yes,
some people do.
Yeah, I've done it in the past. Not any longer.
Yeah. But I meant, like, some people sleep with their pets, and that's just the wrong thing.
Uh-oh.
Hey, there's a new poll out that shows that a number of Americans who say they're very proud to be Americans has hit the lowest point in history. It's still really high, but it's hit the lowest point in history. We'll talk about that. And Donald Trump visits alligator Alcatraz and talks about how anybody who tries to escape might be eaten by a snake or an alligator, and he even demonstrates how to get away from an alligator. So we'll talk
about
that.
Yeah. All right. Alligator Alcatraz coming your way. Scoots up next, folks. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Tuesday evening. We'll see you again in the morning.